둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. That way you get new interviews sent to you every single week, just like this one here. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Of course, we've had some great guests on lately, as usual, including Jim Kerr of Simple Minds. We talk with actors David Hornsby and Charlotte Nickdow about the latest season of Mythic Quest on Apple TV+. Jason Isbell was here, blues legend Taj Mahal, the Foo Fighters, Nadia Natasha, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Peyton List, who stars in Cobra Kai and School Spirits, Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, Genesis, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today is a special Rewind episode with two artists, Adrian Belew and Daniel Ash, two sonic architects who helped redefine the boundaries of rock. Belew, the guitar wizard behind King Crimson, Talking Heads, and David Bowie, turned the instrument into a playground of sonic weirdness, bending, looping, and warping notes into something entirely his own. Meanwhile, Daniel Ash, whether in Bauhaus, Tones on Tail, or Love and Rockets, helped shape goth, post-punk, and alternative rock with his hypnotic, reverb-drenched riffs. Both are innovators, each in their own wildly different way, but united by an endless curiosity for pushing sound forward. And for this special Rewind episode, you're going to get my conversations with both of them separately. Now, both interviews were conducted in 2017. We're going to start with Adrian Belew, who at the time thought he was just going to Italy to do some guest guitar work for his buddy Stuart Copeland of The Police for a project that Stuart was working on. Of course, Stuart had a different idea in mind, which was to rope him in, along with Mark King of Level 42, in hopes to form a band. The results was Gizmodrome, which released their self-titled debut as we spoke and talked about writing and recording, as well as his involvement with David Bowie and Frank Zappa box sets and tributes, all that and more. It's part one of this Rewind episode. We start with Kyle Meredith with Adrian Ballou.
Gizmodrome here. This is a seriously cool project that you've become a part of.
Yes, it is seriously. It is serious, and it's cool. And it's also a lot of fun. I mean, it took me by surprise because I was just thinking I was going to maybe play on a project with Stuart, maybe play, you know, some crazy guitar on a few songs. And then as it turned out, over 10 days, it turned into a band and everybody was loving it and really enjoying being together. The music, I think you can tell there's a lot of joy there. And we just decided, well, heck, this is so much fun and we love it. We got to share it with the world. So we will be coming around to tour next spring.
I know. I guess you weren't planning on another band at this point outside of the trio, but I guess there's got to be a luxury in a band, and especially a new band this far into your career, because I think of bands a lot of time when you're young, you know, you have that gang mentality, us against the world, we're gonna get together and do this. But a lot of times as we get older, a band is more of a collective that we put together for a little bit. And from what I sense on this one, it feels more like the early thing for you guys.
It definitely does. It feels like kids in a candy store. And at the same time, now that the record is out and it's getting an amazing response everywhere, and we have a record label. Now, that's something I haven't had for a long time, a proper record label. I thought I'd never have that again, in fact. So it's really nice to see, A, that we have a great record label, very proactive, out there, you know, getting people to know about this, and B, that we can be on the radio. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
I didn't think that was going to happen for me again. So I'm very, very happy.
Well, I know we're biased over here. We try to play just about anything that you send, that you put out into the world,
I thank you for that. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, the caliber of musicians on this, I mean, you play with great musicians throughout your career, but this does feel like it's something a little bit bigger. And of course, having Stuart in there is part of that. For you, I don't know how to word this. Do you find like this is getting people on your level? And I'm obviously giving you a compliment there. Or do you really have to stay on your toes with these guys as well?
I'll tell you what, this is just fun for me. I mean, everyone's great. And I'm not saying that I don't have to stay on my toes. I'm sure it will be that way when we play live. But for recording the record, I was just having fun. And everything I did seemed to work, which is one of the reasons I like the band so much. It's custom made for some of the type stuff I do, especially on guitar. I like the songs and I immediately had lots of ideas and they encouraged those ideas. And, you know, it just grew and grew and it got better and better. So, you know, for me, it's going to be a real fun project. I kind of relate it to the days that I spent back in 1980 with the Talking Heads. We went on tour. We did this record called Remain in Light. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of that. The same situation. I went in the studio with them, and bingo, I could play whatever they needed. I had it. I had it. It was ready.
I mean, working on the fly like that, it does sound fun. Because these songs, they almost sound like they were built off of jams. But I guess they were sort of, a lot of them were put together before you came in, right?
Well, yeah, they were in various states. Mostly it was just kind of Stuart and Vittorio. Either, you know, maybe they had a basic demo, not many of those, but most of the time they were just showing us the basics of the song. Here's the verse, here's the chorus. And then we'd go out together in the studio, all four of us, and work up an arrangement and, you know, then say, okay, let's do a backing track. Here we go. And we'd do probably no more than three. Almost always we'd take the second one. And then it was down to, you know, adding all the fun ear candy and the vocals and guitar solos and all that stuff. So it was a quick process. No one ever really thought through anything. It was whoever's got a great idea, it's your turn.
That's taking the second one. That's funny because that's like, here's the first one for practice. The second one we nailed it. And the third one was just one time too many.
Yeah, that's true. Every time it seemed like we always nailed it around the second time. And the third one was a little too organized, because we like the sort of jam quality about it, the fact that it doesn't sound like you've sat down and worked out a lot of parts. It sounds like a band, you know, playing together. And I really wanted to reinforce that on the record. I wanted it to feel that way. I think when I listen to the record, I feel like I'm standing in the middle of the room with this wonderful sort of dancey music going on. It makes me happy.
Well, that's exactly what my house was last night. It was that and me and my wife in the middle of the room dancing around to it. So you succeeded.
That's the thing. I kind of put this record on now. I don't listen to a lot of other records. I'm always busy with my own ideas. In fact, I'm writing songs for the next Gizmo record right now. But I put this thing on in the morning, and it really starts my day out, man. I'm just grooving. I'm just like, wow, it's going to be a good, happy day.
Now, maybe it's because I'm not so used to Stuart on the vocals yet. Are you singing lead on any of these songs?
I don't sing lead on any of them.
Okay.
They're all Stuart's and Vittoria's songs. And to be honest, Stuart sings a way that no one else can. He's got a sort of a larger-than-life kind of character, the way he sings. He's more of a storyteller than a singer.
Mm-hmm.
But what we learned early on was that Mark King and I blend together beautifully. He's a great singer, and we've both had a lot of experience. So what we do is we sing the choruses. And so you've got the story going with Stuart telling in his own wacky way, you know, and then all of a sudden the chorus comes in, and it's perfect harmony and all the stuff that you'd expect. So that seems to be the blueprint for this record. Next record, however, I'm sure that I will take more of the vocal time and do some of the writing as well.
Getting ready for these live shows, is he having to prepare to be the front man for these songs?
Oh, gosh, yeah. If you knew him, he's very... He's very, very excited about being, you know, out there with a Stratocaster and a Marshall amp and just singing his songs. I think it's really inspiring him. Of course, he will play drums. We all insist on that. So there will be some of the time when he's the drummer. When he's not the drummer, when he's the front man, we have Pete Biggin, who is the drummer for Mark's band, Level 42.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't miss a beat because that's going to be a great rhythm section as well.
Well, it's been so fun to listen to these songs. I mean, right from the beginning, of course, you know, in a timely manner, in many ways, with Zombies in the Mall starting it off. I mean, I thought to myself, I'm like, you know, it's probably safe to say that this isn't about Halloween. little double story happening there with the sign of our times, but it certainly works for the season.
Well, you know, we meant for Summer's Coming to be the thing that came out at the right time, but it came out a little late for Summer. Summer's going now. Maybe Summer's gone. So we'll have to bring that one back next summer.
Yeah, I also want to bring up, I noticed the next Bowie box set is going to be your era, right?
I believe so, yeah. And there's a new box set from the Zappa Trust, Family
Okay.
Trust, that I did liner notes for. And it's the performances we did at Halloween with Frank Zappa in 1978, six shows over four nights. It was eventually turned into the movie called Baby Snakes, but now you get to hear all six shows if you want. It's something like 18 hours worth of Frank Zappa shows. So, yeah, and I am also part of the Celebrating David Bowie tour. We did this in January, and we only went to six cities, Sydney, Tokyo, L.A., London, and New York, and it was sold out everywhere. We had a great time. It was a big event, you know, lots of David Bowie music with lots of guest artists. We had Sting, the guest artist in L.A., for example. We're going to do some more of that next year. I'm going to be able to do the European dates, which are in January. I won't be able to do anything beyond that for a while because that's when Gizmodrum cranks up.
Yeah, but still, you know, to be a part of so many of these amazing projects and, you know, flex that creative muscle in so many different ways. That's got to be a lot of fun.
Well, it's going to be a lot of work, and then it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, we are.
I got to learn all this stuff now.
We're always so impressed by everything you do,
thank you.
Yeah, having so much fun with this record too. So, congrats and thanks for this music, and you know, we'll see you around when you come around again.
Well, I truly thank you for your support and playing this music, and I hope everyone will check the record out and watch for us next spring.
All right.
We'll be there.
We will be. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
And we'll be right back right after this.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. All right, for part two of this Rewind special, it's my 2017 interview with Daniel Ash, the legendary co-founder of Bauhaus, Tones on Tail, and Love and Rockets. We got to talk about punk rock. We got to talk about Taylor Swift, reggae, why he says he'll never tour again or possibly make any more records. That has been broken since this interview happened. Let's jump into it, though. It's Kyle Meredith with Daniel Ash.
I was thinking, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, but when you look at your discography, it doesn't look like you've been doing much lately, but that's not the truth, right? Like, you've stayed pretty busy in the past few years.
It varies. On some fronts, I'm not busy. Like, the live situation, I don't do that anymore, no. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I sort of stockpiled over the last sort of 10 years that has just been come out on a thing called Anthology, which was something through Cherry Red Records, I think. And it was just a compilation. Well, there were two re-released albums from Beggar's Banquet, and then there was this third disc that was called Bits and Bobs, which is, I don't know, about 18 tracks. Mm-hmm. That I was sort of submitting for things like film and TV and things like that, which never got used. So after a while, I realized there was about 15, 18 of them. So then I just put them out on that.
Yeah.
But there's this, you know, there's things out there, you know, and I've got a few other things coming out soon.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually do a CD, just, you know, print up like 500 copies and see what happens to, just for the website, things like that.
Of new music, or is this older stuff too?
Yeah, there's a few new things. I'm doing this track. I've got this track called Freedom I Love. I suppose you would put it in the category. Some people said it sounds like the Pet Shop Boys, which is a sort of a real compliment for me. It's definitely not a rock song. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'll see when it comes out. I mean, I've got it mastered and everything, and I'm toying with the idea of doing a video for it using a lot of motorcycles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But, you know, most of the stuff I'm doing these days is for sort of not tailor-made, but sort of in the hope that I get it placed in film and TV for film and TV stuff, or, you know, shopping gigs to try and get gig scoring.
Yeah.
Films, which would be terrific.
When you, you know, was there a point in your career that you actually saw it kind of directing this way? Like, I've talked to a handful of artists recently that they said, you know, it's, I mean, when you're a fan, of course, we just look and you're like, oh, when's the next record? Or, oh my God, they disappeared because I haven't seen an album. But you're still working. You're still, you know, creating. You're out there doing it.
Well, yeah, you know, you get to a point where you don't want to do the live thing anymore. I mean, we were, you know, doing live gigs from like 1979 to about 2005. So I've had enough of that. That's sort of done, been there, done that type of thing. And when you get older, you know, the idea of being able to score a film, or, you know, to get songs placed in good films or in even TV adverts, is appealing, because you don't want to go on the road anymore. And as you know, actual CDs and records and whatever on the, in their own right, you can't make a living, you can't survive doing that. Mm-hmm. So the ideal for people, you know, like myself at this stage of the game, is to get placements in film and TV. That's it. That is an outlet.
Yeah.
You know, in preference to slugging it out on the road, which holds no appeal for me at all, and hasn't done for a long time. I don't miss it at all.
Yeah. And when you're scoring and everything like that, I mean, I'm sure your name does carry some weight going into an industry like that, because that's a whole new world that you have to break, right?
I suppose, to a degree. But, I mean, I'm still waiting for that great gig. I mean, the last gig I got actually scoring was in 2003, ages ago, for a thing called Keen Eddie, which was, it was actually a comedy about a New York cop who screws up on a drug bust in New York and has to come to London to sort it all out. Mm-hmm. And it's a comedy around that. And me and another guy, Billy Goodrum, we had to do like 105 pieces of music. And it was great. We had like 5 weeks to do it. There were about 12 or 13 episodes. And we finished a week ahead of time, and it was terrific. It was for Paramount Pictures. A thing called Keen Eddie. It was in like 2003. Anyway, that was the last proper gig I got as far as scoring. The other stuff has been things like placements for existing tracks, on adverts and stuff like that, which, you know, keeps us going.
Yeah.
But, yeah, these days it is about, you know, getting the gig involved in that industry, music, the movie industry, now, whether it be film or TV.
You talk about, you know, getting the adverts and all this. Did that have anything to do with you going back and retooling some of your songs for this album you just put out earlier in the year called Stripped? Because it does give them a new life, even though they're sort of familiar. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That was part of the motivation to do that. In fact, you know, I got X amount of money from Pledge to actually make the album, but all of that plus some got used up in making the album. So what I'm hoping in the future is that those songs will, you know, be used in modern films, in stuff coming up. So still waiting for that to happen. You know, it's just, it exists forever, so we'll see.
Right.
But the thing is, everybody and their uncle is doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, so I know, you know, because you get to a certain age, and to be honest, you don't want to go on the road. I mean, some people do, but I think they're insane.
You know, I'm not near as old, and I can probably agree with you on that.
It's so unhealthy.
Right.
It's such an insane lifestyle. You know, you do a gig, and then you travel through the night about 500-600 miles, and then do the same again for like 3 months. No thanks.
Yeah, right.
That's crazy. It's okay when you're 20. You know,
right. You did your time.
Yeah, I did my time.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to write off Strip like it was just solely for the music, because it sounds like you did get to put a lot of, you know, thought into this and creativity.
You kidding? Yeah, I was working on that thing in my little office there with a friend, co-producer, engineer, Dustin, for 6 months, you know, in the baking heat here in California. And it's like we had this little, you know, swamp cooler thing in there, and then when we had to do vocals, I'd turn it off and the room would get like an oven in about 5 minutes. Do the vocal and then switch that air conditioner thing back on again. Yeah, it was 6 months, pretty much 5 days a week for 6 months to get, because I'm a real perfectionist, and you know, the way things are, the way I want them to sound. So instead of it taking about 8 weeks, it took 6 months.
Yeah,
and that's where all the money went, you know, making it.
Right.
But it really, you got it, you know, I don't believe in demos and doing stuff that's half-baked, so some of those songs as well, it's very hard to redo them because they were fully realized to begin with. So to get another angle on something that is already fully realized was tough. But I am pleased with it. You know, it's something where I can actually tell people about it and give them a CD even or whatever, mm-hmm. and feel that, yeah, this is not throwaway. This is, you know, real work.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering about some of those songs. Like, you know, your final recordings on Stripped, were they, you know, kind of the journey of a song over its own life, where you're like, oh, that needs to be recorded, and you've said that for years, or did you go in this with a blank slate on every one of these songs and recreate it right then?
Oh, yeah, no, it was a blank slate on everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing from the original songs on there. You know, there's some, an extreme, you know, difference was, they say, like an American Dream. I mean, the only way I could approach that, that one took a long time because it was fully realized with the Love and Rockets version. Mm-hmm. So the way it was turned out, as I was talking to the engineer, the co-producer, you know, about like, well, where do we go with this? And every time I'd have a guitar on my knee and absentmindedly would be playing reggae riffs. And I thought, it suddenly occurred to me, you know what, let's do it reggae.
Yeah.
So we spoke with that idea, and then a friend of ours, Christopher the Minister, who really helps me out with all this stuff, and he does my website and everything, he said, no way, don't do reggae, don't do reggae, God, no, no reggae, please. And so we didn't do reggae for another week or so, and then I thought, fuck it, I am doing it reggae because it sounds good. So we went ahead and recorded it, and at first he didn't like the idea at all, and then he sort of saw it. I mean, because the thing is, I was listening to a lot of reggae through the years with the bands. Kevin and David played a lot of dub reggae on the road, and I loved it. I mean, the sound of that stuff from the 70s, the real dub from the 70s, is superb. You know, it's like 70s disco. It's perfect. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's recorded well. It's just so extreme sounding. It sounds terrific. So I've got that in my head. I know what sounds good as far as reggae goes. So, you know, we were able to pull it off. And it was a lot of fun doing those bass lines as well,
yeah.
Playing the bass. on those tracks. You know, I love playing bass. So that was fun.
I love the way all of them came out. And I love the story that you've been telling about how I guess it was your manager maybe that had said something early on about you doing an acoustic version of these, and you blew them off very quickly to say,
It was the guys, it was the meeting I went with Chris. We went down to L.A. to have a meeting with the people from Pledge, and they were saying, okay, you got to do acoustic versions, stripped down acoustic versions of these songs just to get you up and running. Mm-hmm. And I thought, not my thing, but I'll give it a go. So when I got back here, I put the strapped on the Kippy acoustic guitar and lasted about 7 minutes, and I found it unbearable. I felt like I was a folky or something.
Yeah.
I felt terrible. So I was like, 7 minutes later, thought, fuck this, no way am I doing, you know, hippie versions of these songs. Ironically, they were written, most of them, on an acoustic guitar. But, you know, I don't like that one guy in an acoustic guitar thing. I've never liked that.
Yeah.
So I went completely the opposite way and went electronic on it. You know, because I really love electronic music. I love the way drum machines sound. You know, they sound much better than most drummers, you know, because it's a hell of a lot easier to program them as well.
Sure, there's some jokes in there, just laying themselves out.
There is a joke in there, isn't there? There's a thing about, you know, you used to see hippies on the back of their trucks, drum machines have no soul. Well, that's bullshit. They do. They have a lot of soul, depending on how you program them.
Well, I'm so happy you didn't go with the acoustic versions, because, again,
oh, God.
What you've got here is something I can actually listen to as a full album.
Pardon?
Because what you've got here is something I can actually listen to as a full album of something new, well, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was pretty much what we planned, is exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right down to, you know, talking about it before we started, saying, well, there might be a couple of reggae songs on there. And there are. There are two reggae songs on there. And there might be an original track on there. And there is. There's one original track. It's weird how it all turned out.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was 6 months instead of 6 weeks. You know, because I hate underproduced records. I can't stand them. I'm really into production and getting things sounding really good. I hate under, unless of course it's the Velvet Underground, then it sounds fantastic. But that's just that band is the one band I think that can do that.
Always the exception. Let's
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Daniel Ash.
It makes me think that then, you know, I shouldn't probably expect a full new album from you right away, judging from, you know.
Well, okay, this is the thing. This is the thing with the motivation to do an album. It's like I say when people ask me that, when was the last time you sat down and listened to a whole album?
Mm-hmm.
And most people's response is they can't even remember, because our attention span now is very different, and people don't want an album. They want a song or two or an EP. The whole idea is pretty old-fashioned now, the whole idea of a whole album. For people like me, anyway, it's so much work to put into it. And then what do? You sell 500 copies? The motivation isn't there for me to do that.
Right.
I'd rather sort of concentrate on... I mean, my ideal would be somebody to say, okay, we've got this film, we need to score it. Here is the scene where we want something for it, boom, boom, boom. There's your 35-second spot. There is your minute and a half, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real gig for me. The whole idea of albums as such doesn't really exist anymore. Like, in all honesty, if I made an album, who's going to buy it? 500 or 600 people, and that'd be the end of it. And it's way too much work for me to get motivated on that. It's just not practical.
Right.
It's just it's the reality of it. You know, there's a lot of guys that are in their 20s making albums that people are much more interested in than me. That's the reality.
Yeah. What about just the creative side? I mean, you know, are you still just picking up your instruments just to play, just to write music for yourself?
No, never. No. I never have done that anyway. Right from the get-go when we started 30-odd years ago, I would never pick up a guitar just to jam and strum around. I've never done that in my life. I have no interest in that. I have interest in a finished product. I mean, the working process, you know, making a track or making an album, great. But jamming, I've never done it. It holds no interest for me at all.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I don't know any scales. I am very lazy. I'm very, you know, it's a mixture of extreme laziness and wanting to be spontaneous, because I personally can't labor over anything. I've really got a very short attention span. Mm-hmm. They have a name for that now, as you know.
Yeah.
Well, I've had that all my life since I was at school, you know. I have no attention span. So all this stuff comes up. The only time I would have to focus is in the old days, if I'd write a song on a guitar and I just get a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of red wine or two, and it would make me focus because I know I've got an end in sight.
Right.
And that would be the finished song. There's the motivation, you know, and it would take, sometimes it would take half an hour, sometimes it would take 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But whatever, there was a motivation for the end product. But now, as I said before, it's just a reality check here. Me making an album, not enough people are going to be interested in actually buy it for it to be financially viable, never mind about anything else. So, you know, playing, strumming around on the guitar doesn't pay the rent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't, especially now more than ever. You have to sort of look outside the box big time.
Yeah. The other side of your life, the non-musical side of your life, you're doing the art shows. Is that a big part of your life or just something every now and then?
I did this a few years back now, in 2011, 2012, I did an art show in downtown L.A. Mm-hmm. See, again, rather than being steady, it was just this one year in 2011, I did like 60 or 70 paintings
mm-hmm.
one summer in the back garden underneath the oak tree. I just had all this shade. Got out this big old table and started going loony with paints, you know, spray paints mostly. And I knocked out like anything from like 4 inches square to 4 feet by 8 feet pieces. And I just went nuts for about 6 weeks, just every day, just going crazy with all the, and then, you know, I got this exhibition out of it. And so that's been and gone. I sold a bunch of those pieces and now I've started again. You know, it's on the website, you know, the, Chris handles all that, but mm-hmm. I'm doing prints of the shots of the pieces and also selling originals. So that's something that I'm having fun with, yeah. And I'm also being able to sell some pieces and sell some prints.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. And to be honest, if that really picked up, I'd be doing it all the time. You know, so it's a matter of what's available, what my options are. But, you know, going back to doing the album thing, it's too much work for no payoff. I mean, it's not financially viable.
Right.
Is the bottom line on that as well. If it was, then I would do it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just the way it is. People don't buy albums like you know the story. They just don't buy albums like they used to.
I know the story.
Unless you're Taylor Swift, and that's great. You know, the big stars. That's totally cool. Good luck to them. That's great.
Daniel, where's your Taylor Swift album?
I wish I was in that. What was that?
I said, where's your Taylor Swift album? When's that coming?
Well, put it this way: if she asked me to play guitar or bass or do some backing vocals, I'd be there in a New York second.
Mm-hmm.
I really would. I love all that pop music. I think it's great.
Oh, don't blame you for that.
I love really good pop music. You know, there's good stuff and there's crap, you know, mm-hmm. but again, it's a lot of it's personal taste. But I remember years ago, I used to say, I think that, you know, Britney Spears is doing some great stuff, and people would go, what? And I meant it. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the way it's always been, though.
Well, yeah, no, I know, but a lot of people, they think I'm supposed to like things like Nine Inch Nails or Marilyn
right.
Manson or something like that.
Right.
You know, but way back, I really liked Duran Duran. I really liked George Michael back in the 80s. Thought his stuff was amazing, and I wasn't supposed to like that, but I'm a real sucker for great pop music.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
In fact, I think it takes a lot more talent to write a hit single than it does to do all these so-called indie albums. It takes a real talent to make a hit single.
But I feel like that's something you've always had to deal with, like even, you know, going back to that, you know, much talked about time, you know, jumping from Bauhaus to Love and Rockets, when you go from this darker music to suddenly a poppier side of you. I mean, I'm sure you had to answer
there was
to
the
a
chemistry
lot.
Of the, no, I didn't have to, there was no compromise or anything. It was just, all that is the chemistry of the band. Like, in between those two bands is my favorite band, Tones on Tell.
Tones on Tell, yeah.
Yeah, that was a specific chemistry. The way Glenn played the bass, which was, I think, really something. Brilliant bass player and keyboard player as well. It really sort of shaped the way it put things in a certain direction. And every time you take one person out, because that's what happened with us. We take one person out of the equation, put another one in. You know, because those three bands are quite incestuous, really. It's basically the same people give or take one person. I mean, that's what it was. You know, like you got Bauhaus then. Turns on Tail was Kevin and myself and Glenn. And then the Love and Rockets was Kevin and myself and David.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's always like a couple of people in the various setups. But the chemistry is very different. The atmosphere in the studio, everything. That's what's great about it. You know, that's what makes it different and fresh and new. So, you know, I mean, and on this one, you know, I was working with a few other people on strips. You know, there's the guy from Pussifer. There was the guy from She Wants Revenge, mm-hmm. Adam, you know.
And you're Matt. Working, you're on the new She Wants Revenge song too, right?
Yeah, well, they just used my voice because they wanted, yes, I am. I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah.
I went in and put some weird Evo guitar down, from what I can remember. That was ages ago. Is that out now?
I believe that's out. It's on their 10th anniversary version of the album.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just broke down there into his studio there and put some of my weird Ebo stuff on one of his tracks. And I remember it working great.
Yeah.
He had this piano piece, and I just sort of, again, I didn't think about it. I didn't even know what key it was in, just started playing the Ebo. So I much prefer doing that than, I have no patience to think about stuff, and I find that when you think about it, it's really boring.
Yeah.
What comes from it, whereas if you're spontaneous, I mean, that's where all my guitar bits come from. It's like, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? Here's the break. And I just start hitting a note and see what happens and then take it from there. It's the opposite to how proper musicians work, I suppose, like real ones.
Don't undersell
yourself. I'm definitely not one of those real musicians.
Don't sell yourself short. The amount of great music you put out in the world, it cannot be
understated. Well, yeah, but it's like Brian Eno. I mean, if you know, I got huge admiration for him, and he's one of those non-musicians musicians. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I bet you he doesn't know any scales at all. And thank God, because if he did, he'd be boring.
Right.
Because the stuff would be predictable, you know. It's like you get that musical snobbery with those guys that do know all this stuff, and then before you know where you are, you start end up sounding like Yes or Genesis or something. A fate worse than death.
I hope that's the pull quote from this interview.
Talk about boring.
Yeah.
Thank God for punk rock that kicked all that shit out the water. That's for good.
Hell yes. I gotta say, I'm gonna wrap it up on that line.
Were those guys? No, I just remember at art school when I was like a teenager, and all the boring guys with the big bushy beards and brown jumpers would be in the kitchen talking about politics with Yes or Genesis in the background, whereas all the rest of us were trying to get laid, you know, in the other part of the house, and those boring old farts talking about politics. Always remember, they'd always have that fucking Yes music on, and it was just ego wanking on all those chords and. It had no sex appeal, zero sex appeal, just like those guys in the kitchen.
Daniel, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you for talking today.
Okay. Well, anyway, all right. Well,
yeah.
A funny movie.
No, I've enjoyed that, seriously. And you know what? I will say, as a fan, whatever it takes to eventually to get you just to walk in the studio and do music, however, I'm going to be listening. You know, if it's a single, if it's an album later on down the road, whatever it is, I'll be
well,
there.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, I mean, I, you know, if this painting thing is sort of going okay at the moment, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
All right. Well, thank you, Daniel, and we'll see you around. Take care.
All right.
And there you have it. My thanks to Daniel Ash, my thanks to Adrian Blue, and my thanks to you for checking out the episode. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. That way you get new interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news, plenty of guests dropping by. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Plastic Bertrand, Slater Kinney, Tom Waits, Jack Jones, Mama, Gary Clark Jr., The Kinks, Counting Crows, Courtney Barnett, Cage the Elephant, Luscious Jackson, Suzanne Vega, The Primitives, The Human League, U2, David Burns, Squeeze, and my interview with Andy Taylor of Duran Duran. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.